Now started looking at treated timber a little more carefully. plastic bags in terms of the environmental concerns. We're involved in that. And from an electrical point of view, there's solar water heaters and plumbing equipment. In terms of the electrotechnical environment, all electrotechnical appliances we are involved with, and these appliances, those that have a electrical circuit within them, will have to fall within a technical regulation or compulsory specification. In terms of the foods and associated industry, we derive our mandate from the Foods and Cosmetics Act, and clearly from the mandate that's given to us from the AFSA, Department of Agriculture, Food, Fisheries and Forestries. And here we concentrate mainly on fishery products, including canned meat and processed meat. So our involvement in foods and associated industries focuses at the moment on the fishery products, on canned meat, and on processed meat. In terms of the legal metrology division, we look at the calibration and verification of measuring instruments, weights and measures, gaming equipment, that is the calibration and verification as well, and we also look at the quantity or the measurement that is being given to the customer in terms of the measurements that are advertised on the packages. With regard to building regulations, in terms of the building regulations and standards acts, the NBR and the NRCS is required to ensure that the regulations, the building regulations, are applied uniformly across the country in order to meet with certain technical or quality standards. So in terms of our enablers and our strategy, I mentioned earlier, chairperson and committee members, that we are now concentrating on the point of entry or manufacture. This is called source inspection. So what happens is that we found that from an international practice and from our work in the country itself, that it's easier for us or it's more effective to determine or to inspect the products that have to comply with technical regulations at the point they are manufactured within the country, or the source, the point of entry into the country. And the point of entry really is are the ports of entry being Durban, Port Elizabeth, Kuha, Cape Town, Cambridge, and City Deep, as well as the other border posts. The reason for this is that we are able then to lock out these non-compliant goods from trade before they actually enter trade, because once they enter trade, members will remember that they are distributed to various different outlets all over the country. And then for us to go and track and trace all of those non-compliant goods and recall them would be a massive task indeed. So it's easier to lock out these products at the point of entry into the country or the point of manufacture, and it's more effective in ensuring that the consumer is not harmed by these unsafe products. But we still continue with our inspections at retailers and distributors, because even with the work that we do at the points of entry and the sources of manufacture, there are still products, non-compliant products, that enter into trade, and we do then go around to the retail inspections and distributor outlets. We do the retail inspections in order to identify those products that are non-compliant, and then we trace them back to the source so that we can remove these products from the marketplace. We work very closely with our partners, being South African Revenue Service, Bureau of Standards, as I said, DAS, Consumer Commission, Home Affairs, SEPS, Health, Transport. We have various different partners, and we're also working closely with the Water Management Agency to see how best we could utilize the capabilities of all these partner departments in becoming a lot more effective. In terms of the risk-based approach and the source inspections, we depend on very good market intelligence. We get the market intelligence by scrutinizing the information we get from the shipping lines. That's your manifest, shipping manifest, your bills of ladings, and of course the import documentations that are provided to the importing agencies. Some of the highlights, we'll talk to challenges as well later. Some of the highlights for the last 5 years. For the last year itself, in 2013-14, we held 3 destruction events, and non-compliant goods to the value of 55 million rand was destroyed. However, over the past 5 years, the NRC has destroyed products, non-compliant products amounting to 438 million rand. Now, if you compare this, and these were done by using your market retail inspection approach, if you compare this with the source inspections, especially at the ports of entry, during a 6-week period in April and May this year, we were able to identify more than 100 million rand worth of non-compliant find that the approach, the focus moving from market inspections to source points of entry or source inspections is resulting in a lot more efficient impact than it was previously. Also, just to say that the Durban harbor is the largest in Africa. Approximately 20,000 containers come through the harbor on a daily basis. Just in a six-week period in Durban, we were able to embargo 61 million rand worth of crop products, and this is because they were simply not complying with the requirements. As compared to a six-week project we had done in at the retail outlets, would resulted in approximately a million rand worth of non-compliant products being found and embargoed. In the quarter one period, prepackaged goods amounting to 34 million rand were found. Now, this is a very serious matter because it meant that the consumer was being told that a certain measure of goods is available to him, but the actual measure differed from the advertised measure. So the savings to the community amounted to about 19 million rand just for that one quarter. Of course, we will be upping our game as far as that is concerned to ensure that those who are selling very short measure, who are advertising a certain measure, but the measure is different from that advertised, the actual measure, we will be dealing with that as well. Of course, as I said, we are risk profiling through SARS. We're working very, very closely with SARS to use their risk engine to do the risk profiling at the ports of entry. Another highlight during the period and during the first quarter as well is that we've implemented the customer relationship management system, which now enables industry participants to make applications for their authority letters online and for us to conduct our inspections using technology rather than using a manual process in doing that. We've operationalized the border enforcement after the pilot session in Durban. We've now operationalized it at City Deep in Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, Kruger, Baybridge and Limpopo. Baybridge and Limpopo is done on a periodic basis based on a risk assessment conducted. Our performance reporting and management has improved, as you would have noticed in the annual report and the report of the Auditor General. During the last year, paraffin stoves were still found to be non-compliant. Paraffin stoves were still found to be quite plentiful in the environment, especially in the informal settlements. So we undertook a winter campaign program, and we exchanged non-compliant paraffin stones for compliant ones in order to make the community a lot more aware of the dangers of purchasing non-compliant products. Approximately 1,500 paraffin stoves were given to residents in informal settlements, and we undertook a huge awareness campaign to basically highlight the dangers of purchasing non-compliant products. Chairperson and members, I would like to say that last year and the year, 2 years prior to that, the NRCS was subject to lots of labor challenges, which to a certain extent impacted quite heavily on the ability of the organization to do its work. Last year we were able to reach certain settlements with organized labor, and you would find that the work that has been done and the impact created since June last year has increased quite a bit. We are still working very closely with organized labor and with our employees to create a much more harmonious and a firmer terrain from which to do our work. But just to say that we have indeed made significant progress with regard to the organized labor and the disputes that was raised by organized labor surrounding the conditions of employment for the employees of the NRCS. Our overview of the strategic outcomes, we've now got four key priorities that emanate from our mandate in terms of the NRCS Act, and the first one is the green base to develop and maintain and administer compulsory specifications and technical regulations. The second one is once, of course, we've been involved in the development and maintainment of the technical regulations and compulsory specifications, and thereafter we administer it, but then we're also tasked to ensure there's compliance with the technical regulations and compulsory specifications. To do all of that, we have to have an optimally capacitated institution, and this relates to all these supporting and corporate functions of the institution. And we also engage in media, marketing, and awareness. This is largely designed to inform and educate our stakeholders about the work of the NRCS and more especially the impact of non-compliant products, both for industry and the consumer in the marketplace. And just to stop for a second here to say that in terms of industry itself, you would find that non-compliant products are generally much cheaper than compliant products, because clearly the quality of raw materials used to manufacture those products would be cheaper than lower than the quality of raw materials required for compliant products. The skills level for processing those products are also different. So the end result is that the non-compliant products are normally cheaper, and therefore they crowd out the marketplace for compliant products. The difficulty is twofold, of course. Non-compliant products pose a huge threat to the consumer. And we have some pictures here which we can show you about what the impact of non-compliance. They've caused check fires, raising down informal settlements. There was the case of Pepe Kruger, who had suffered 80% multiple burns as a result of using a gel that just exploded. So it causes huge amounts of trouble. That's to the consumer. To the industry, the bona fide industry participants who produce compliant goods, they find themselves in trouble because they are faced with the scavenge of cheap, poor quality goods, non-compliant goods, and they basically are unable to sell because the tariff from the consumer is very price sensitive. So our education and awareness campaigns really is intended to highlight those challenges that both the industry and the community face, and why we do our work as KNRCS. In terms of the annual report and the performance information, so some of our targets that we set out to achieve at the beginning of the 2013-14 financial year, in the fishing, in the foods and associated environment, one of our targets was to inspect 100% of the locally produced products that were declared to us. And during the year, we were able to do all of that, and we conducted 6,159 inspections as far as that is concerned. In terms of imported products that came into the country, again, we set out to inspect 100% of the product produced that was declared to us, and we achieved that by conducting 13,124 inspections. In terms of exported products, that means we have a large market for live abalone and other types of fishery products to the European Union and to China and so forth. However, those countries will only accept these products once they have been given a health certificate, compliant health certificate by the NRCS. We were able to then inspect all 100% of those that were exported and sign them off as compliant, and 13,793 inspections were conducted. Now, the inspections, of course, are quantitative in nature. The impact can be seen from the fact that in the last year, we did not have any reports of food problems from the canned products, fishery and fishery products, and we did not have any comebacks from the countries where we had issued the clean bill of health insofar as the exported products are concerned in terms of the impact of the work that has been done. With regard to inspections of factories, remember that we also inspect factories that where fishery products are produced, and that is like your ING and so forth. 272 factory inspections were targeted, but 446 was conducted, and that is related largely to the number of requests we also received. And that has been balanced up with the vessel inspections. We were supposed to have inspected 450 fishing vessels. These are the trawlers that go around to get fish and also process the fish, so the processing is very important, but we were only able to do 403. And the reason for that is there's been a reduction in the squid industry. So because of the reduction in the squid industry, the number of vessels that we use have reduced also. So we were able to only conduct 403 fish inspections for fishing vessels, but you would note that we've balanced them out with the factory inspections. In the CMM area, 4,960 was targeted, 5,192 was conducted. In the automotive industry, 4,000 targeted, 4,054 achieved. In the electrotechnical industry, 4,000 targeted and 4,338 achieved. Now, with regard to the LOAs, and I'll just stop for a moment here to spend 1 minute on that. Chairperson and members, you would recall that we've had some discussions around the turnaround period for letters of authority, and this was subject to some significant discussion previously. Of course, we've changed the time from 21 days to 120 days for the letters of authority, and that's simply because the quantum of goods that are coming through the ports of entry has increased considerably. And because of our work now at the ports of entry, the number of applications for a letter of authority has increased from 300 three years ago to approximately 1,000 a month currently. So we did an exercise to determine how much time it takes to issue a letter of authority, considering all the requirements, the test certificates, and so forth. And we also benchmarked internationally. And we came to the conclusion, or the conclusion was drawn for us from these exercises, that indeed we need to call a lot more time on the applications received. Because being under pressure and issuing a LOA for a non-compliant product is very, very dangerous for the community, and it's also dangerous for industry. Having said that, it would be we do take into consideration that there are industry players who are very modified in their approach and what they do. So we have gone on the basis, or we've gone on the approach of the we've gone on the trajectory of doing risk profiling of the applications that come to us, as well as the participants in the industry. And the risk profiling is done in three ways. We risk profile products. We risk profile the people who are bringing the products into the country, and we risk profile the countries from which the products are coming in. So, of course, the risk profiling will then assist us in achieving a quicker turnaround time if that proves to be successful. Having said that, Madam Chair and honourable members, we did note previously that the 120 days is still on the lower end of the international scale, but it enables us to conduct our work effectively and make correct decisions with regard to the products that come into the country. So in the trade metrology area, we targeted 3,951 inspections and 4,287 was achieved. With regard to the regulatory development, maintenance and administration area, we targeted 9 compulsory specifications. We were able to achieve 8. We did not achieve the 1 simply because we are dependent. We participate very closely and work closely with the South African Bureau of Standards, as well as industry and other stakeholders in the development of standards. And once standards are developed, then we convert them into technical regulations. So during the year under review, we were not able to achieve 1 simply because the development of the standards themselves was delayed because of community participation and other requirements. In terms of our financial overview for the 2013-14 reporting period, our total revenue that we collected was 290,843,000 against a budget of 270,000, and which resulted in a positive variance of about 20 million rand. And that is largely due to the levies. We were able to increase the collection of our levies because we've done a lot of levy audits, and those industry participants who are required to pay levies and who are not paying the levies were then asked to pay the levies, and that proved to be positive, and we were able to realize a bit of, as you can see, 11 million rand, almost 12 million rand worth of increased levy collections. So in terms of the levy audits that goes to prior years, we budgeted 3.5 million. We realized a total of 3.4 million, which is not a significant difference of 66,000 rand. In terms of service revenue, which is really the cost for LOAs and other services that we render, we budgeted 33.8 and we realized 33.5. And I'll just skip to the core funding, which we get from government. We budgeted 103 million and we received 103 million. Then with regard to expenditure, chairperson and members, you'll find that we projected expenditure of 270 million, but we actually spent 248 million. Now, whilst you could see that compensation of goods and services was a little lower because of some of the vacancies we had, a lot of the expenditure reduction in expenditure was as a result of the cost containment measures that we had implemented. And just to zero in that we had realized some savings from travel subsistence and travel expenditure because we've taken certain decisions to limit the costs there in accordance with the cost containment measures that was issued by National Treasury. And of course, in terms of our irregular expenditure, Madam Chair, previously the NRC has had high levels of irregular expenditure. In the 2013-14 financial year, we were able to reduce the irregular expenditure to 5.8 million rands. I didn't put this onto the board, but I can provide the information. Of which, after doing the necessary investigations and assessments, the board was able to regularize 4.6 million rands worth of the expenditure. So 1.2 million rand is still under investigation. We have all the documentation and so forth. We are now investigating the reasons for the irregular expenditure. And once that investigation, the investigations are being conducted by both our internal audit unit as well as the managers responsible for those for the units where the irregular expenditure occurred, we will then give it the necessary attention. So it's really it's an amount of 1.2 million rand that's still that is still outstanding. Of course, in order to deal with the irregular expenditure, high levels of irregular expenditure that we had realized previously, we put in a whole lot of governance measures, and this has resulted in us taking a bit longer to get some of the goods and services that we require because it needs to follow all the SCM processes and governance processes. So the budgeted amount for the goods and services as opposed to the actual spending, there was variance in that. Our revenue growth, just to give you a graphical view of the revenue growth, the blue line right on the top shows you the total revenue, and then the darker blue line shows you the levies. The red line shows you the core funding that we get from government. Madam Chair, I would just like to say that you would notice that the total levies reflect the trajectory of the core funding from government. Just to say that we are trying as far as possible not to place undue pressure on industry to collect high levels of levies. In fact, the Department of Trade and Industries is funding us quite phenomenally or quite significantly in terms of enabling us to do our work, and that comes really from the core funding, the red line, in terms of our expenditure. So for this six-year growth, you find that there's an incremental growth, but not a steep curve. It's a very gradual gradient upwards. And in terms of income against expenditure, the six-year review, I'm looking at slide number 22 now. The blue line shows your revenue, and the red line shows your expenditure. So you would find that the expenditure closely dovetails the revenue, but we are able to keep expenditure just below the revenue so that our organization continues to remain sustainable and we don't enter into a situation of irregular expenditure as a result of not having money, unauthorized expenditure, or to place the situation of the NRCS under stress. In 2015, that's budgeted information because we work on the zero-based budgeting, then you'll find that expenditure and income will always be equal, but the actual revenue versus the actual expenditure may differ once the actuals are realized. Madam Chair, with regard to the audit report, I think we'll have to just spend a few minutes here. We've received not a very good audit report. In fact, we've received a concerning audit report. We've received qualifications on two main areas from the Auditor General. The two main areas resulted in six items on our annual financial statements being affected. So essentially, in the audit report, you'll find that the Auditor General has issued qualification statements on six items on the annual financial statements. On the first one, it is with regard to the revenues that we collect. So what we've been doing thus far is we've been following what was a regulation called R999 that was in existence when the NRCS was the regulatory arm of the SAPS. Regulation R999 allows the regulatory arm to collect levies from industry participants in July, that's at the end of, they will declare the levies at the end of June, to collect in July and August. I think there's a three-month period in which payments could be made, and then again at the end of December, so to allow for payments to be made. The result of that is that we, in our financial statement, we reflected the actual cash amounts collected and not the amounts that were due for a financial period. So the levy declaration period ran from 1st of January until 31st of December, whereas the financial year ran from 1st of April to 31st of March. So there was a timing difference in terms of the monies. Because we report on accrual accounting as required in terms of the PMMA, we were required to report the actual revenue we would have realized during the period 1st of April 2013 until 31st of March 2014. What we did is we showed the actual cash collections during those periods. So when that was, and this was following the R999 regulation that was previously issued, the Auditor General then brought to our attention this year that indeed when the NRCS was established, the NRCS Act automatically repealed the Article 9. And the NRCS Act says that levies will be payable on dates to be determined by the minister. But NRCS did not then go to the minister to get the minister to assess these levy dates. So we were not complying with a Act of Parliament, with the NRCS Act, but we were following a practice that was already there. However, that practice also, as the Auditor General pointed to us, was not in keeping with the principles of accrual accounting. We then went to get certain technical opinions, and the Accounting Services Board concurred with the Auditor General that indeed we should be recognizing the revenue in terms of accrual accounting practice of the financial year rather than the cash collections. So we went further then to determine to see whether we could make actuarial estimations of the revenue that, using the information available to the organization, to determine whether we could then very credibly and accurately determine what the revenue would have been due to the organization so that we could correctly reflect that in the financial statements. We did do actuarial evaluations, and we got a group of actuaries to do it, provided all the information, and they did give us an actuarial evaluation. Unfortunately, there was a further difficulty that was brought to our attention, which related to the completeness of the revenue. What the Auditor General then told us was that they were not certain that the NRCS is getting all the revenue that it should get, because we are conducting the inspections, and we were supposed to translate the inspections into revenue where it was necessary. Of course, we couldn't double charge, because if a person is selling a product, there wouldn't be a revenue or levy implication. But when people are importing into the country and they manufacture in the country, then those products are subjected to levies. But once they are subjected to levies at that point, there shouldn't be a further subjection of levies for a person selling goods, because they should already be subjected to levies at the point of entry into the country or the point of manufacture. However, the Auditor General was not sure that we had indeed identified all the levies that were due to us, and therefore they could not place reliance on that. Of course, by that time, at the end, by the middle of May, it was by the middle of July, it was impossible for us to conduct the exercise. So we concurred with the Auditor General that indeed this would be a qualification, and we put into place mechanisms to actually deal with that. So that results in two items. One is the revenue, and then the debtors, because of course debtors is a function of revenue. The provision for bad debts or the provision for debtors is a function of revenue, so that results in both the qualifications for revenue. The second area of qualification, Chairperson and members, related to our employee costs. Last year, in 2013, we reached settlement with organized labor on the outstanding remuneration matters since 2009, and then we went into a plan of then correcting the anomalies that existed by correcting the payments to our staff members. However, we use the information that we have available on file. When the Auditor General then looked for the supporting information, they had difference of views in terms of what constitutes supporting documentation. Just to give you one example, in our files, we would have had a document that says, you have now been translated to a senior inspector, or your grade is now changed to that of senior inspector. What the Auditor General required was an appointment to the rank of senior inspector. They said that our documents did not meet with the requirement of supporting documentation. So the Auditor General then, because of the wage settlement, they chose a very high sample of about 250 of the 300 employees that we have in the organization. And we then implemented a project of correcting all this documentation, but before the audit could be finalized, that was not possible. In our intervention plan, Madam Chair, we will show that we've actually conducted an audit of all 300 files right now. We've identified the documentation that is required, and we are in the process of collecting all the documentation from the various different units in order to meet the requirements of the Auditor General. This qualification has had an impact on four of the line items, which is the payments, as well as the accruals for your leave, the accruals for your medical expenditure and so forth. So it had an impact on those four items. Madam Chair, I want to give an assurance that we have taken all of this into account. We've got together action plans, and we've made significant progress in terms of collecting these matters in the action plans that we have developed. I will talk about that in a minute or so. In terms of the quality performance information for the first quarter, we've planned to achieve 12 compulsory specifications for this financial year in terms of the development of compulsory specifications. Compulsory specifications, which takes approximately 24 months to complete. There is a process of developing the standards and then having industry and stakeholder meetings and discussions, converting, referencing those standards through the compulsory specification and technical regulations, having further industry and stakeholder engagement, then having the approval processes through the NRCS, and then finally getting approval from the board at that stage, and of course now it would be in terms of the accounting authority. So this takes approximately 24 months. So it's it will be a challenge to try and say that we can achieve a compulsory specification in the first quarter. We didn't target any compulsory specification in the first quarter, but we are quite confident that the 15th, the 12th that we are targeting for this year would be achieved because we are in the process of developing 15 of those compulsory specifications. With regard to the implementation of the NRB, the building regulations, we target 90 days from which the cases are received. In the first quarter, we haven't had any cases. However, I would like to say that we've had a challenge with the National Building Regulator. The review board was not functional for a number of months as a result of a dispute between the review board chairperson members and ourselves in terms of remuneration and also in terms of the operating processes. We have now concluded the matter where a terms of reference has been signed off and accepted by both the minister and the chairperson of the review board. And it's anticipated that the review board would start its... In fact, we've already been contacted by the chairperson to make all the cases available so that they could continue with their work in terms of the national building regulations. I may just want to pause and say at this point that I think members, chairperson and members would have noted from the media that we had several unpleasant disasters actually with regard to the building industry, the one in Tongata and Forest Hill and Marble Hall and so forth. Now, these were not because the standards themselves were inadequate, but because there was non-compliance. I mean, in Tongat, we've now realized that some of the preliminary investigations have shown that indeed the Itigweri municipality had issued instructions to the owner not to proceed with construction, but he did indeed proceed, so it becomes a legal matter. In the case of the house in Johannesburg, it would appear that the contractor and the architect did not get the required plans passed, but they continued with construction. So it's more a case of non-compliance with the law rather than the standards being. However, the Building Regulations and Standards Act is very old. It's 1977, and the DTR together with the NRCS have now put in together a terms of reference for a full review of the NBR, the standards and the act. We spoke about the 120 days working days for the LOAs. I won't touch too much on that. And with regard to the body inspections for the automotive industry, you'd find that we targeted 720, but we achieved 590 in terms of the source inspections. This is at your actual MIB manufacturers, builders and in the country. Now, I want to say, Madam Chair, that in these targets, we did make certain adjustments in terms of the source inspections, body inspections, and retail inspections, depending on the risk information that came through. So you'd find that although we were down on the source inspections at the actual manufacturing sources in South Africa, you'll find that we are up on the border. From 240, we actually achieved 354. And then retail, we went from 240 to 319. That is because of the type of information that we had received and, of course, some of the requests that we had received. With regard to chemical CMM, we targeted 338 border, but we did 672. Sorry, we targeted 672, my apologies, and we did 338 source. At border, we targeted 336, we did 224. With retail, we targeted 672, but we did 935, and that's, again, largely because of the information that we received in the risk. This included a lot of inspections where the plastic industry was involved. In terms of the Electrotechnical, we targeted 440. No, sorry, we targeted 88 calls and we achieved 166. Border, we targeted 440, we achieved 608. Retail, we targeted 352, we achieved 450. Then with regard to the legal metrology domain, and this is weights and measures, especially the three packages, we targeted 1,045 in the first quarter, we achieved 1,441 in terms of source inspections. Retail inspections, we targeted 261, we achieved 324, and here it's because really we had more capacity in the unit. Two new inspectors were qualified and were able to conduct these inspections on their own. With regard to the food and associated industry, Chairperson and members, in terms of the locally produced canned fishery and meat products, 100% of the declared inspections were inspected. 100% of the declared produce products were inspected. In terms of locally produced frozen products, we targeted 258, we achieved 283 inspections. The percentage of inspections conducted on all declared imported canned fish, meat and frozen fishery, 100% of the declarations, we were able to inspect all of them. Then with regard to the food and associated industry in terms of the requests received for fish and fishery and canned meat exports, and this is, as I said, in terms of issuing the health and safety guarantee certificates, all 100% requests that we had received were able to attend to. And inspections on fishery and canned meat processing factories and vessels, we targeted 251, we achieved 234, and you can see that that's the dashboard indicator there is orange because there's been the actual target has been slightly lower than planned target. In terms of our financial overview for the first quarter, in terms of our levies, just on the top line in the bold print, we had budgeted for a levy collection of 449, almost 50 million rand, but you'll find that there's a variance of 114,000 rand. The reason for that is it's again a timing problem because a lot of the levies, all the declaration takes place, we collect the levies mostly in the second quarter. So we are quite confident, Madam Chair and members, that in the second quarter you'd find that this position has reversed itself to actually the actual achievement of the levies would be in line with the budgeted amount. And the rest of them are more or less in the same manner. As you can see, services revenue is about a little more. Our core funding with which we've been able to get that. In terms of expenditure, compensation of employees, we budgeted 51 million, we paid out 43 million. Goods and services, we budgeted 23 million and we paid out 11 million. And again, this is related a lot to the cost containment measures as well as to the governance processes that we've now implemented to ensure that we do not incur any irregular expenditure. So the total, the net result of our first quarter financial performance is that we budgeted for a surplus of 38 million rand. We've realized a surplus of 12 million rand, and that is largely attributable to the timing difference of the levies that we receive as an organization. Just to say, the revenue, composition of revenue for year-to-date of July, levies comprise the major portion, most proportion of our revenue is shown in purple, and then the levy audit is a smaller proportion, and then service revenue in green, as you can see, that it's the second largest composition of our revenue. This is the same information shown in graphical form. And then in terms of our expenditure, just to say that employee costs make up 78% of our, made up 78% of our expenditure for the first quarter. Goods and services made up 20%, and other expenses such as depreciation made up 2% of our expenditure. Just to stop a minute and note here that, in fact, the NRCS is largely a service-driven organization or a manpower-intense organization. We conduct inspections. We go around, we evaluate applications, so we need a larger component of people, and that's why our employee costs are higher, and also in terms of the skills and qualification levels of the people that are required to conduct the inspections and reevaluate the applications that we receive. So that's the expenditure again, shown in graphical form. It's the same information that we've provided narratively and in terms of the pie graph. So just the financial overview of income versus expenditure. The line blue shows revenue, the line red shows expenditure, and the line, the bar of the green shows your surplus or deficit, and you'll find that we don't actually achieve any deficits. We do plan and we do manage our expenditures so that it keeps within the amount of monies that we have available. Just on the challenges, some of the challenges we have for doing some of our work is that we do still have inadequate testing facilities in South Africa for some of the regulated products, for example, motorcycle helmets, brake pads, and some of the testings also take a long time if you want to test the CFL, one of these OLED globes. And because those globes claim to last for 9,000 and 8,000 hours, the testing of those pieces of products, those products take a long time. In the industry itself, there is no specific regulatory program or qualification that is available. So what we normally do is we draw from the various engineering fields, and then we go through a program, a competency development program, within the organization to train our inspectors. So if we do have an abnormal situation where we need people urgently, that poses a problem because there is a program in which we train for people. But however, what we've done is over the last few years we have a candidateship where we train candidate inspectors, and we also have an internship to increase the pool of people available to us and to the regulatory industry at large. Some of the visas are very outdated and we spend a lot of time on them. We are now reviewing all of them to look at the visas that are outdated, and I spoke about the NPR Act that is very, very old. We are re-looking at them so that we bring them up to date. And the other challenge that we face as an organization is that we do embargo large quantities of products that are non-compliant at the port of entry. Very often these products are abandoned, and the information available to us from the shipping manifests and other documentation proved to be incorrect. We send our inspectors to the sites where they claim to have physical evidence, and it turns out to be a vacant land. So there's two or four cases of CFLs at City Deep that's been just abandoned, and these are huge containers, 40-foot containers of CFLs. Now, to destroy each of those CFLs is in the region of about R3. Oh, compact fluorescent lights. These are energy-saving globes. So to destroy each one of them because of the electrical components it has and the mercury levels in those globes, it's about R3. So first of all, we have to find the cost to time. We have to find space to keep them. We've got to find transport costs to bring them away. And once we get approval to destroy them, then we've got to find the money to destroy them as well, because we have to protect our environment. So this is also a challenge that we are dealing with. Current other challenges that we face, our organization is still in transition. Although we are in existence for 5 years, we have realized some labor and organization challenges in the last 5 years, which we are attending to. We do know that we have lots of work ahead of us. We haven't reached the performance levels and the financial levels that we should have reached. We have lots and lots of work. We are not immune to that, but we do understand we've put into place mechanisms to deal with that. And so our maturity is still ongoing. We will reach maturity in due course. Our generation of revenue is reliant on trends and market performance. Remember that we collect levies on production internally and importation. So if imports or production is low, we tend to get lower levies, and we realize that we actually experienced this last year when the fishing industry saw a drop in the production, and then our revenues from that industry also dropped. Internal control weaknesses that we had realized previously, including procurement, asset management, HR, and as I said, we've put in place action plans for all of that. I do note, Madam Chair and members, that indeed these are things that we should do as a matter of course in the organization. Just to say that what we've done in that regard is that all the internal audit findings, all the auditor general findings, we've put them onto a matrix. We've got action plans for each one of them. And I have not actually spent time on the action plans. I should have when we dealt with the qualifications. When we dealt with the revenue qualifications, there are action plans that management interventions that we spoke about, action plans that we have got for each one of them. So every audit finding that is in the management letter, every internal audit finding, we've got an action plan, We have an executive meeting every week on a Monday to manage and monitor the implementation of the action plans so that we attend to all issues and we deal quite thoroughly with our internal control measures that we are supposed to implement. So, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, just to sum up is that indeed we have realized some highlights during the 5 years, especially last year and this year. We've had set significant challenges. For the first time, we've been qualified on both on revenue and on human resources. We have put in place implementation plans, and as we speak right now, we've made significant progress in the implementation of those action plans. Every matter raised by internal audit and by the Auditor General is on the matrix, and we are monitoring the implementation of those action plans on a weekly basis. And that's the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO, Mr. Moodley. Thank you. Do you want to see anyone else who's going to add to this just immediately, or I think it's appropriate we could engage? I'm looking at behind you there, the group financial. They're fine. All right. So you consider yourself quite a young department. Right. Okay. Yes, the Honourable Mantash, followed by the Honourable MacPherson at this point.
Where's the appreciate the progress that is being done by NRCS? I only have two questions to pose, which are not very difficult. So they've been covering that with grilling them, and I've not seen that so far. They complain of not reaching their targets of enforcement. Do they have enough enforcement agents? And again, my assumption is that, I must correct it if I'm wrong, it looks like they concentrate on foodstuffs and forget about the influx of clothing that kills our textiles in our country. If that's not the case, they must just clarify.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash. Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. I've had quite a lot of detailed engagement with Mr. Moodley since the start of the fifth Parliament, and I certainly found his engagements to be welcome, and at least he's willing to engage us, which is hugely important. And earlier when he was talking about the issues of LNAs, which has been a key focus of mine, I noted with reservation about the talk of profiling, which were extreme things, and I need to fully understand exactly how that's going to work. But I still want to suggest, and I do know that the department have said after our meeting some time ago that he would be looking at it. But you know, I think with the current system of 120 days on LOAs, whatever they be in the electrotechnical industry or the chemicals industry, I mean, of course it's easy to achieve a above 90% target on such a big lead time. I'd be interested to know what would our target be on 21 days. And I still think that, you know, we are hampering the ability of importers to put goods on the shelves in a reasonably quick turnaround time. And we know that any successful business is all about speed to market. That is the one critical thing that they require. And I still think that it's something that this committee and this department should be supporting is almost like a gold card system that importers that meet the criteria of the NRCS have a fast track system which allows them to import, and should they be found wanting, that they are then that gold card system, so to speak, is removed. because it then allows the NRCS to focus in on the problems, and we know where the problems are specifically coming from. I mean, you know, one only has to, you know, look at some, you know, retail outlets which are prolific in throughout South Africa, and I won't mention the one that comes from the Far East. I mean, how some of those things are allowed in this country is just beyond me. And so what we do is we create a system that people work up towards to reach and to maintain. And I still think it's something that would greatly assist your department in terms of functioning and also better managing your staff. With regards to the budget for quarter one, I just want to ascertain under unclassified current expenses for your 2014-2015 budget. It seems to increase quite dramatically from what it looks like to be 132,000 in the 2013-2014 to the budget of 12.4 million. I just want to know why that increase and what you term as unclassified current expenses. Thank you.
Right, over to you then, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. I will answer the first, I'll answer Honourable Montage's question and the first question by Honourable McPherson. The budget question, I will ask the CFO to answer. Honourable Montage, in terms of the Jefferson to you, in terms of reaching or not reaching our target enforcements, I want to assure you that the first quarter is always a bit of a challenge, but we will certainly achieve it over the year. Do we have enough people? No, there's not enough regulatory inspectors in the environment at large. Therefore, we're working closely with we've started engaging with some of the universities to see whether they are in agreement of having specific costs that deal with that. But as internally, we have our own program. It's a 7-year program to take a person from a candidate inspector to a principal inspector situation. So that's how we're addressing that. And we have both candidates as well as interns. Our mandate, Jefferson, does not include the textile industry because the textile is not a regulated industry in terms of safety of products. There are certain aspects, for example, your swimming devices and children's toys where there's lead and so forth that would be involved. But the textile industry in terms of clothing and so forth is not included in our mandate, so we don't target that industry. Honourable McPherson, yes, I take all the comments you made in good spirit and I don't have difficulties with them. We will look at what will be the impact of a 21-day turnaround time. I don't have the information here, Madam Chair, but I can go back and try and give some information to the committee. Now, in terms of the profiling, what is it that we are doing? It's exactly what we want to achieve in terms of having a profile for the importers. I think I could probably say that we are working closely with one of the retail outlets, and maybe for the sake of confidentiality, I won't be able to disclose the name right now, but together with the DCI, we are on a pilot project. So that retail outlet, we will at some point in the very near future come to a situation where both of us are in agreement that there's no non-compliant products on their shelves. It's a large, very, very large, one of the largest retail outlets in South Africa. So when we've achieved that point with that retail outlet, then we know that retail, whatever comes through for them, is largely low risk, and we can give it a different approach. When we've conducted that pilot session, we want to then roll it out to the other retail outlets. And we are of the view that if we do that for all the larger, more well-known retail people, we would have actually attended to 70% of the environment. And then we can give our attention to the other 30%. The whole approach to profiling is for that particular reason, to get our products and our industry participants on high risk, medium risk, and low risk. And of course, there would be a different approach to high risk and a different approach to the low risk. We may possibly look at a system whereby, I'm not saying it will be a gold card system, but there will be an approach that would be appropriate under the circumstances. And then, Madam Chair, we'll just hand over to the CFO to answer the question on the budget. Thanks.
Thank you, CEO. Basically, the 12.4 million is the non-cash provisions that we don't account for under either employee cost or other operating expenditure. So it includes things like your bad debt provision increases for that budget period,
bonus provisions. Last year there was no bonus paid out, so that's why that amount in comparison is very low for the actual of the prior year. So it's really just your non-cash items, your provisions specifically.
Address the question raised. Yourself, Honourable Mantosh. I have a question myself. I'm still, this is why I asked. You're 8 years old now. The Act went through in 2008, is that right? Or was 2008 6 years old? Right. And it took you sort of 5 years then to find out that the Act covered levies, repealed this R999. Just want to work this out, you know. This is 2013-2014 financial year. Now, how sure are we? What sort of confidence have we got that you've studied this legislation? If it was 5 years, if you like, for that to be brought to your attention. And I really would like that addressed. Have you taken more than just the action around the levy? Because that's something that should be a red flag alerting you to other aspects of legislation. Are we in compliance with this clause, that clause, the next clause? Has that exercise been done? Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks very much. To answer the first question, in terms of the R999 levy, I forgot to mention that in the last, I think it was September, August, we did then also, obviously, the minister was able to gazette and regulate the levy for that period now. We now regulated that the industry must declare 4 times a year at the end of each quarter, but we kept the payment period as it is so that it doesn't cause too much of inconvenience in the industry. What we've done is the last CFO and the legal section, we haven't completed the exercise, to take every requirement that we have from a financial point of view and a legal point of view, to list them onto a spreadsheet to see whether we're actually complying with them. Because it's not just the NRCS Act that we're talking about, but it's also the accounting rules and so forth. So the CFO has been tasked, and she's here to confirm that, with a project. And I must say that she has come back to me and told me that maybe necessary to even get an outside expert to review that, because this is quite a complicated approach that we're taking. But I said, let's do it first internally, and then once we've done it internally, we can get somebody from the outside to verify it. By the same token, we have a schedule on compliance with laws and regulations. Our legal manager has been tasked now with looking and reviewing at that schedule, reviewing that schedule to ensure that everything that is relevant to us in terms of the acts that we draw our mandate from, that we indeed comply with. Madam Chair, I can say that maybe at the next presentation to Parliament, we would then come with those schedules and we'll make it available through to you.
Yes, I think that whenever one hears something like that and it just pops up, it should be seen as a little flag, an awareness flag, alert. The other one was the ICT. The ICT issues. Now, 6 years, I know that ICT you can't put in 1 year, but how long have you really been grappling with the whole ICT issue? And what measures exactly, if you can explain to us, have you taken in that regard?
Thanks, Chairperson. With regard to ICT, there are a few matters that were raised by the Auditor General. So let's start with the highest. The highest level was the governance, the ICT governance. Now, the ICT governance is twofold. One is the actual physical governance in terms of the structures or the forums that we have, and the second, of course, relates to the policies and procedures. Both have been addressed. We now have a ICT steering committee. Whilst the board was still with us, they've appointed an ICT steering committee of outside experts. I can assure you, I can also confirm that these experts are very well recognized. One is a professor at a university and so forth, so they're very highly qualified in their fields. They form the ICT Steercom, and they look through our ICT. We meet on a quarterly basis, and they look through our entire ICT strategy and our governance and so forth. Of course, part of the Steercom committee includes the CIO, the CFO, the head of internal audit, myself, so that we deal with all the governance issues related to ICT. Anything to do with ICT in the organization goes through the Steercom.
The organization has also compiled all the relevant policies and procedures in terms of the governance requirements, and we've been able to do this because there are already existing policies and procedures for government from the GTOC perspective. What the steer commit has asked us to do is, before we formalize those policies, is to get an outside review of the policies to see that indeed they are relevant to the organization. So we haven't done that yet. We are still in the process. I've signed off the request to follow the SCM processes to source an outside provider to just review our policies and to tell us that it is in order or when we have to fix them. So once that is done, then we'll go back through the ICD steering committee and we'll be able to do that. The other matter that was of concern was the CRM, the implementation of the CRM. That has been in development for a long time. It's been in development for about 4 years. However, during the course of this year, we've fast-tracked it, we've given it a lot of attention, and we've went live with the CRM on the 1st of September. During the month of September, we did certain work. We asked the inspectors to use the system to see whether the inspections can be conducted as we had planned. Of course, there were some teething problems. There were some difficulties, challenges that we experienced. We're now in the process of fixing them up. One of the difficulties is that we need licenses. Initially, the system was designed and we required only 21 licenses. Now that we are using the system to conduct our inspections and to have an interaction with our stakeholders, it requires a lot more licenses, something like 79 licenses. So we're in the process of preparing those licenses as well. The last matter on ICT, Madam Chair, was the movement. Until September last year, we functioned or we utilized the SAPS ICT platform environment. So last year in September, we moved from the SAPS platform, from the SAPS environment, to our own environment. So even then, we have found some teething problems. Of course, together with the partners who have done the migration, we were able to give that some attention, and we have attended to it. Our ICT is not perfect yet, in fact, it's far from it, but we are attending to it on a daily basis so that we actually achieve the performance that we expect from our ICT systems. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moodley. Mr. Seaman? Honorable Seaman, sorry.
I am looking here, Honorable Chair, at the industry sectors that are covered by this presentation, and focusing particularly on building regulations, having in mind the low-cost housing in this country, having in mind the frustration of the consumer because of the quality of the low-cost rent, and if they do fall under your area of performance, I wonder if you could speak to the quality of these houses and why are they of such a poor quality in spite of your regulation.
Thank you, Honorable Simon. There's someone here who can address this, Mr. Moodley. While you are you on the point? Right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Watch Jefferson. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much for coming to the fore.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to share one more of a comment than a question, really. I recently spent some time in the United States of America, including a very fascinating visit to the Port of Baltimore in Maryland. And the Port of Baltimore is able to get containers off ships, cleared through customs, and onto trucks in 46 minutes, and out of the port in 46 minutes, which is an incredibly quick period of time if one considers it. But one of the interesting things that I found was when I asked
Yenge.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on both the local and important products, because you are saying it's 100% canned stuff, meat and fish and fishery products that you have actually confirmed to be up to standard. I mean, is that a real statement or is it an ideal statement? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm looking to see if there was anyone else, because this would be the last opportunity. I just wondered if it was a concern, you know, with trade and industry. And there was a comment on one of your pages to do with the squid industry. It was to do with targets. And on the one hand, verbally, you indicated that there are not many left. But I see here on page 16, it says to the closure of the squid industry. I would hope there is still a squid industry around, considering we're busy eating squid. I'm not sure where they're coming from there. You know, and even if they were being imported, you'd be checking them. So how are we getting the squids that we are getting at the restaurants if there's no more squids around? That's the one aspect there. The other one, of course, as well, I think when we passed the Legal Metrology Act, when we put that through Parliament and was passed, of course, ahead to this year, you did make reference to the number of extra trainees that would be brought on board. You may just indicate to us if that has been implemented, because you made a reference to trainees, how many you do have. If you don't have that figure now, because you have indicated it doesn't take a year, there's a process involved. It takes several years to get them trained up. And I see you made a reference to the HR strategy, so that at least we can count on. The backlogs have already been addressed, I think, by the Honourable McPherson himself. But overall, you've got a number of areas where you've exceeded your targets. But it is a concern that even though you exceeded the target on chemicals, etc., judging from media reports, there are a number of challenges arising there with substandard products around the place. And the question would be, is this related to your education or empowerment program that you may have on board, because it indicates that your awareness was perhaps 23%, and perhaps there is a relationship in that. But if you would address that, thank you very much, CEO Mr. Moodley, and your team, of course.
Chairperson, I'll ask Dr. Lamana just to deal with the housing matters, and then I'll take the rest of them. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the National Building Regulations, the National Building Regulations and Building Standards Act is there to ensure that there's uniformity in building throughout the country. The implementation, however, is done through the local authority. So there are challenges there in the sense that sometimes the building control officers are not found at each and every municipality. In addition, some residents, as it has been alluded to, do not want to comply with the requirements of making sure that their plans, what they want to do, is actually approved. So we have those challenges. When the Act came into being in 1977, the informal settlements were, of course, not included as part of the areas that are regulated. But currently, they should be part of every construction, actually, now is supposed to be regulated, but the compliance is still a problem.
Thank you, Dr. Zuman. Chairperson, yes. Yep. So, with regard to Honorable Hillary, thank you very much for that information. I would like to say that I think members would be aware that the Cabinet approved the establishment of a water management agency sometimes in 2016 going forward, and the this is under the jurisdiction of Home Affairs, and I do know that they actually undertook certain visits. And if I'm not mistaken, one of them was the USA, the other was some countries in Europe, and the third one, which is still to take place, is in the Middle East area. So I would imagine that the information from the USA is available. We would, of course, get that from the border management to just see how it's been done. And, of course, thank you very much for that. But just to say that this is the intention of the CRM system, is for industry participants to be able to access the NRCS through a web-based system and actually make the LOA applications online. And then from there, we work closely with SARS to link that to the SARS system. So on the SARS system, there's a risk engine that will identify products that are regulated. And there will be an administrative requirement that says, okay, this product, it requires an LOA from the NRCS. Does it have an LOA? If it doesn't have an LOA, then essentially what you're saying is that it will go through the system a lot faster. So we're working towards that. The first step, of course, is for us to have implemented CRM, which we have done. It's now for us to stabilize that. But we will look further on the information that comes from the BMA research tours that are undertaken, and we certainly will give it a lot of attention. Honorable Luania, with regard to the 100%, now our target is to inspect 100% of what is declared to us. See, for example, those that are exported. China may want a certain quantity of live abalone. Now, the abalone farmers here will come to us and tell us, we want to send 20 crates of live abalone to China, but we need to certify that these live abalone meets the health and safety requirements. So our inspectors then will inspect them and we'll be able to do the health and safety requirements. Similarly, locally, for example, canning factories, Saldana, will tell us that they're now producing 20 million cans of fish. So we go and look at the processing and so forth to declare that those fish. We look at microbiological counts, bacteria, and so forth. So the 100% is the declared targets that are, those that are made available to us. With regards to the squid industry, Madam Chair, I'm unable to answer the question. I will certainly go back to the General Manager for Fishing, and we would consult, unless there's somebody from BCI who can, but I certainly will go back and get the information and communicate it through to you with regard to where the squid is coming from. Okay. We certainly will do that. And then with regard to the Legal Metrology Act, Madam Chair, we haven't actually brought in the people as yet. I'm not sure if you would recall, but when the last presentation was made, there is an action plan that we are developing, because the Legal Metrology Act has some far-reaching consequences. It's going to take a period of time in which to implement the entire legal. We're currently, between the DTI, the Commander's Office, and the Legal Metrology Stuart Customs and his team, they are developing that action plan. So we will, of course, then come to Parliament and we'll make you available to you, and we'll tell you exactly how we're moving on to that. Then with regard to the awareness, 23% awareness, indeed you are quite correct, ma'am. Our assessment of awareness of NRCS is really at a 23% level. So what we've done to deal with that is, firstly, we go on these outreach programs. We've now started including malls and railway stations as part of the outreach program, because we found that people target a lot of people who are supposed to know about non-compliant goods and who don't know at that point. You know, the railroads, stations, especially because they're highly populated, we hand out pamphlets, our staff are there, our media and communication staff are there to explain and so forth. And then we have these outreach programs where we go to communities and we engage with them and we discuss the unsafe products in the language that is relevant to that community as well. Added to that, we are engaging with the GCIS in accordance with the National Trade Circular to buy some media space so that we can then communicate with that level of or that percentage proportion of the community who are exposed to that media. The third thing that we did is during the course of October, or was it September, we had two regulatory workshops. One was the NRCS regulatory workshop where at least 300 people from industry had attended, and we engaged with them. Of course, we've listened to their points of view, and they've heard our points of view, and we had certain way forwards coming from that. The second conference we had was the Building Control Officers Conference that was held in Durban. It was hosted by the Tiwene Municipality. And there again, we engaged with the Building Control Officers on the standards and the implementation of the standards, especially with the honorable colleagues about the RPPLs that are not meeting with the requirements. And there was a case of Marlboro, which of course the honorable members are known of. So we have that kind of engagement with the building control officers, and we encourage building control officers to bring in some of their council members and probably managers, executive managers from municipalities, in order to discuss the impact of the building regulations. In addition to all of that, Madam Chair and members, our general managers and myself, and including our colleagues from the DGI, we do participate in a number of conferences and other events where we present on the NRCS what it is, what's our work, and so forth. Recently, there was a SAT conference where the chairperson himself was not aware that an organization like the NRCS existed. And of course, we had to then explain how it works and so forth. But we do all of this. So indeed, we agree with you that the level of awareness is low, but we have implemented all of these measures, and they are all in a formal plan, a media and communication plan. We have a media and communication unit in the NRCS. There's a formal media and communication plan that highlights all of this. Thank you, Chairperson.
I thought you would also make some reference to the glass. Was it glass or the lights, these bulbs that are in some storage area? I must assume in some port, as it were, whether it's internal or external. You indicated that you weren't aware of where these originated. No one had claimed them. But you must be aware where they originated from, the name of the company, etc. I'm making an assumption here. Otherwise, why would it have been offloaded? Was it offloaded with the wrong papers?
Madam Chair, we're aware of where it originated from, but we can't find the person who brought them to the country. There were papers there, but the papers are incorrect. They have incorrect information. We're aware where it comes from. It comes from one country. And, of course, to send them back is way, way too costly, because these are 40-foot containers. So it's easier for us to then destroy these products and then make an impact on them. But I want to say that as part of the media awareness, why do we have these products so coming in through? Yes, sometimes it's awareness, but other times it's also deviousness. When we plug the hole at Devon, then you find that they use an island bottom entry. And then sometimes fortunately, in South Africa, the ports of entry have specific goods. That, for example, in Richardsville, you can bring in rice, but you can't bring in electrical products. So we have that kind of control. But sometimes some of these controls, and in other ports, in Cape Town and Kuhan, so forth, you can bring these products. So that is why our approach is to sort of target all these areas so we've done that. Thanks.
Thank you for that information. The Scots, the Chief Operating Officer.
Thank you, Chief. I think just to reiterate what the CEO has indicated is that the focus has shifted to an intelligence-driven approach, where we're collecting intelligence about these products, recording them, looking at this, so that we can then look at how we respond in the most appropriate way. And the partnerships that we're striking with the players in this space, I think those plans are starting to gather momentum. I think there was a conference that was held with all of the players in the regulatory space recently, I think about a month ago, and these are some of the, and this will form the basis of the ongoing work of the NRCS. I think, Chair, just to reiterate, I think Minister has gone and visited all of the agencies, and I think he's identified a number of key areas, but one of the cross-cutting areas is around the communication of the work of the agencies. He has indicated that we need to look at how we ramp up our communication around that. I think the NRCS, just in terms of its work, has also been a part of the DGI's. There's an integrated campaign with the DGI and all of the agencies around key areas of work. So we have around consumer, if there are some consumer issues, and this is the plan that we are currently rolling out. And the idea is that we're pooling resources and trying to ramp up the impact. Chair, I just wanted to speak about two other matters that the Minister has also been engaging on. I think one is that the Minister has been engaging with the Auditor General on a quarterly basis. The Auditor General presents all of the agency's reports, and the assessments and the actions that have come out of this contracts on a quarterly basis. So one of the things that the Minister has also asked the AG to do going forward is to also assist in looking at the plans proactively before they are tabled in Parliament. So that work, I think, we will try and kick in during the course of this financial year. And the Minister has also met with the DGI's Audit Committee, and we have an independent, these are all independent members. One of our members is an ICT specialist, and the Minister has also indicated that the need to look at ICT for the DGI, and also tasked the Audit Committee to meet and engage with the Audit Committee chairs of all of the agencies to look at emerging risks. So these are also a number of key controls that the Minister has implemented to strengthen the work of both the department and the agencies. Thank you, Chair.
Members, but I think we should also just check. There was a reference made to the staff in the sense that, you know, the lack, one of the constraints that you do have is specialised staff, a lack of specialised staff. And I know this has been raised frequently. Is the lack outside the public sector as well? In other words, is it a South African challenge or specific to the public sector, your entity, or what is it? Because here I look at what your comment here, lack of qualified staff and the inability, the word inability, to recruit required. Is this in relation to the remuneration scales of such staff? Where is the problem here? Because it doesn't, what you're not saying is we don't have enough funds. So I'm trying to work out what the challenge is here.
Jefferson, thanks. From an MSC's point of view, it's twofold. One is that in the industry, as I mentioned earlier, you wouldn't get a person who is trained to conduct inspections for the NRCs. So what we have to do is, that is the lacking, that is the inability to get the person to come in and then continue work immediately. Yeah, so what we have to do is we have to identify people who have gone through some technical training, like your BSc Engineering, BSc Electrical, bring them into the organization and then subject them to a further further level of training to enable them. It takes 2 years for them to go from a candidate position to an inspector position where they do the elementary inspector work. Then a further 3 years to go to a senior level where then they can expand to the inspections that they do. So that's the training that we're providing in the organization. Now that kind of training is non-existent in the outside. I'm not certain if it impacts on the other industries, but I do know that there is a move from DDI to look at the environment and look at whether they have to have some interventions. I think Ms. Gauss can speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
But it's not related to remuneration levels, because our remuneration levels at the NRCS, I think, are adequate to attract the right staff.
Right. Now, thanks for the explanation. That really has cast some light. Ms. Gauss, are you able, or Dr. Damana, to comment on this?
Just to say that we have established a program where we are insisting that every agency of ours has an internship program so that they can develop new people to come into these positions. I think that's basically it. So every agency will have a number of people that they have taken on as interns so that they can develop them. And I agree with what the CEO is saying, that in terms of remuneration, that is not really the issue. The issue is just to have a focus in trying to get new people to come into the agencies.
Well, look, thank you very much for that information. It has been you've been very forthcoming, very frank in sharing this with us. I certainly hope that part of your review and focus in this area will include the tertiary establishments to make them aware of the kind of skills that the department is requiring and so on. Because after all, as you say yourself, this is a relatively new entity is. It is very young. And, you know, the requirements are becoming more stringent to address the challenges that we do have. So that would be appreciated as well. But I certainly would like to thank all the members of the NRCS who are here with us, with the committee, and also, of course, the group financial officer, yourself, Mr. Naidu, and yourself, Ms. Gulls, the group operating officer, and Dr. Damana. Thank you for being with us here today. And Ms. Naidu, parliamentary liaison officer. Members, that brings us to an end of that engagement. And I know Mr. Hermans has been trying to check the program with some of you, because we've had to now alter it yet again. I'm sure you're aware that on the 31st, I believe, is some joint sitting. I'm just not sure what time that joint sitting is. It's on Friday, so it'll probably be in the morning. So you can see already, no sooner has the program been finalized than we have to review it. So keep that in mind, and we will come back to you on the matter this week. We are meeting on Friday. That's right. The other issue is that Mr. Hermans and I discussed the oversight. It would be a great pity if we could not see the factory's plant, that factory that we've got producing. So he's going to identify one Friday that we can factor that in, you know, certainly before we finish the colloquium on value addition or beneficiation. We don't have the information as we talk to you. Is there anything else from your side, Ms. Hurling? Right. So we're all on target then for the oversight. I don't have apologies other than I have from the Honourable Shivambu, who's actually at Pan-African Parliament, and then we don't have anyone else, but Honourable Elvis is the other apology. Otherwise, everyone is scheduled to go to the oversight at Manatic, the House of Manatic, and we've been asked by Mr. Hermans if we can please meet at Port Face at 2:15. I think it is worthwhile. The department has allocated, you know, quite a bit of money to the clothing and textiles, and let's at least have a look to see what's happening to the money. Is it being put to good use, etc.? Thank you very much. The meeting has been adjourned.